For program information, audio, video and more, head to the RN homepage.
Hi, I'm Cameron Wilson and this is Bush Telegraph. Today joining you from Mowinjum Station. It's near Derby and this is Kimberley Cattle Country. Mowinjum, it's an interesting place. It's one of numerous Indigenous-run cattle stations here. But what makes this property so special are the plans, which could see it totally transform the industry. In a moment, I'll take you for a tour of the property and we'll be meeting some of the stockmen who call this place home.
It's good to see cattle in the yard, you know, like when we go there, I'm up there on the rail looking at them.
But before we do that, I'd like to give you an understanding of what the Kimberley beef industry used to be like and where it's currently heading. Fossil Downs is a station just outside of Fitzroy Crossing. That's just a bit to the east of here, about 4 hours' drive. It was one of the first stations set up in the Kimberley, and it's the last still run by the family of the original owners, the McDonalds. Annette McDonald and John Henwood both grew up in the area, and after they got married, they took control of the 1 million-acre property. The couple, who are now in their 70s, have seen a lot change since then, but they continue to be one of the few that remain competitive. They run 15,000 cattle with just 5 full-time staff. Rowan Reed caught up with John as he took a short break.
I'll start really back when we were kids. It was an unreal life, you know. The people, your workers, the Aboriginals, everyone, it was just unbelievable how well people got on and the loyalty and the respect and the work that was achieved. And then when we got into, you know, left school and working, it was still the same for probably 10 years. And then it started to change. They wanted, you know, people were starting to get more fussy and unions, and that started to evolve around the place. And then in the late 70s, a guy, I won't mention his name, but he came here and he upset everyone because he got them all on union tickets and they thought they were going to be better off, and in fact they were worse off because we weren't just paying the guys to work, we were having to feed and house all their children and wives and everything. And that sort of got rid of all the local people, and then with the Europeans, there's been good ones and bad. As one guy said, you know, he had 20 on the staff, and I said, oh, that's a hell of a lot. And he said, yeah, there's 10 here, 10 coming and 10 going. And that's got worse since, but there are still a few, you know, really good, loyal, respect people around, but it's very hard now.
The Kimberley is a tough place. Has it been tough for the cattle industry?
Yeah, it has, because previously we had meatworks and then they all closed down, and then people were sending cattle south, and then the live export started. And if you weren't an early thinker or, you know, progressive thinker, you got left behind with the old breed of cattle. The people that started buying the Bossindus cattle early had the leg in first, and you know, it's taken a while to catch up, but things have changed so quickly. Sometimes you start one project or one line of thought and then you have to suddenly change it, and it's what, you know, the biggest problems are things like Julie Gillard did to us, and that guy Joe Ludwig, you know. That doesn't help our industry at all, and people are going to be paying for that for years.
What was it like managing stations, you know, in the 60s and 70s? How did you operate your business? Was it quite different from today?
Yeah, it was very easy because you had such good staff. We've got, at the moment, we've got some wonderful staff. But in those days, you know, everyone just it was unbelievable, you know. Everyone worked and laughed and worked like hell and played like hell when they got the opportunity. And whereas now it's just so full on because there's a lot less of you now than there were in those days.
How many were there then and how many are now?
Oh, we would have had about probably 18, 20 people full time. Now we have, you know, five full time. We get a contract crew in to do the stock work, but just on the property, where we used to keep all the people employed, fencing or doing something, you just can't do it now.
So why did that change?
Oh, I think the economics have had a lot to do with it. The price of the animal goes up, but the price of all your fuel and everything you touch now is just so expensive, you know. People used to talk about, you know, buying new equipment all the time, motor cars, trading them in every second year. Well, most of our equipment's like 30, 40 years old, you know, and our motor vehicles are like 10 years old.
How has your management had to change or evolve over that period of time?
Well, we've had a change, because all this country, all the Kimberleys and probably everywhere else were just flogged and eaten out, and we had floods in 83 that made us move our cattle because we didn't want to lose any more. The first year we lost thousands, you know, like between 5,000 and 8,000 head of cattle. I can't remember the exact number, but that made us move the cattle. And since we've moved the cattle, we've noticed the changes in the pastures, and the species that used to be in this country years ago started reappearing. And so we've just continued moving them, which I call intensive grazing. We started that in 85, and it's made the country better. It's made, you know, all these other plants come up and grow up, but at the same time we've been trying to find water and we can't find enough water.
And you said 5,000 to 8,000 head died from what?
Well, that was just on this property, you know, there were just thousands. No one, because a lot of the country where the flood started, you know, the numbers weren't actually there, but we knew exactly how many we had, how many we lost, because we were the only place in the Kimberleys in the late 70s, 80s that TB tested the whole herd.
So they just got washed out to, well, down the river?
Oh, poor devils, they everywhere, hung up on trees, rolled till all their hide, you know, hairs came off their hide, drowned, everything out in the ocean, yeah.
The cattle industry in the Kimberleys now, people are talking about it expanding and talking about feedlots and abattoirs and all sorts of change in the industry. How is that going to affect the way you run your business?
Well, I don't think it'll affect it at all. I think they're putting the cart before the horse. They're trying to get an end product before they get the initial product going. And the initial product is numbers and volume of cattle. Without fully developing these places and getting the water and the fences and getting them really going, I think they might get the market, but they'll never fill it because the volume of cattle are not there.
So what do you think of this concept of northern development?
Well, look, I'm all for development. I'm probably the first guy that says, you know, let them come in, but they're listening to the wrong people. Some of their decisions are, I just can't understand, believe what the way they're thinking. But you know, there's a huge opportunity up here if it was done right. But they're not doing it right. And a good example of that was, I was talking to a guy the other day where they started an orange orchard down in the Walloon area of the centre of Western Australia. And, you know, it cost millions of dollars. And within a year, it was a flop because no one had worked. And I believe that the government's got to help the industries that are really doing something, you know, that are going at the moment, and they will in turn employ more people and make it a better place to be. But the north of Australia, I suppose the unrest or unhappiness is just because everyone's sitting on their bums and not working.
So what do you think this place will look like in 25 years?
Well, unless certain people stop objecting to development and all that, it'll go backwards. It won't go forward because everyone will just close up and go out. But, you know, as there's so much progress in other fields of the, you know, in the world and technology and all that, if we don't go with it up here, well, we just might as well close up and go.
So that's John Henwood there. John's at Fossil Downs Station, which is probably about 4 hours' drive or so from here at Fitzroy Crossing. But back here at the Mowinjum community, I'm with Eddie Bear. Eddie's a community leader here and also has a long history in the pastoral industry. Eddie, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the community here.
This community, the people before they settled in Mowinjum, they were up on the coast, and they're Woorora people, but like we just coming from we're from the Gibri Road, and on station there like Kimberley Down, Napier, and yeah.
So where did you grow up?
I was born in Napier and grew up in Kimberley Down.
So you've always had this connection with the cattle industry?
Yes, had a huge connection. I spent about 30 years in cattle, you know, doing all that stuff, and then later on down the track came to Mowinjum and lived around Mowinjum, and most of the time being a chairperson here in Mowinjum, see, and yeah.
When did you start working as a stockman?
When I first started was in 59 I started working,
And what were you doing? What was it like?
It was good. I started going out started to muster with the men, and yeah, first time out, and yeah.
You were on a horse from a young age, were you?
Yeah, at a young age, yeah. I just left school.
What are your memories of that time?
Our memories were, they were good, you know. Grew up with the old men that, you know, we learned from them, you know, and it was good, yeah. And even though we had a school in Kimberley Down too, you see, and from there, you know, we every weekend we used to go out to the stock camp. You know, and that was me and my brother Vincent. We used to go out there, and yeah, it was good. Yeah,
spent a lot of time on horses, eh?
Yeah, spent a lot of time on horses. Yeah.
What did the old men teach you?
To listen, you know, and you know, to watch what they're doing, you know, mostly, you know, just listen to what they said, you know, and yeah. And just watch them how they worked, you know, and yeah.
So in the 50s, in the 1950s, what was it like living as part of a community of stockmen and living on the stations at that time?
Oh, it was... well, I wish it would be back again, like, but nah, it won't come back. But, you know, it was our lifestyle, you know, like, and living that way was, you know, great. And, yeah, you learn more too and things like that, you know, and yeah.
Why do you say you wish it would come back?
I just sort of miss that thing now, you know. But you know, we starting 1 year, but you know, it won't be the same like before, you know. Yeah.
But when we look around here at the community, we've got the community hall just over to our right, and quite a few houses around with solar panels. There's the art centre up the road.
Yeah.
How much different is this than the?
There's been a huge change in this place, you know. Like since I was here, I'm you know age 64 now, and you know and. You know, I've seen this place grow too, no? And yeah.
So your father was a stockman as well,
yeah,
was he?
Yeah, he was a stockman, yeah. Yeah.
How did he get into it?
Back in the 30s, I think, and a bit further back, they had a government station called Manja. And they were pulled in from all these various places, you know, like pulled into work, you know, and yeah. And as soon as that thing closed down, they went into station like Kimberley Down, Napier, and that, yeah.
Yeah. And so then they'd be working for the European station owners and managers with it.
Yeah, they're working for them, yeah.
What was the relationship like when you were working as a stockman between the white owners or managers and the Aboriginal stockmen?
Oh, well, they got on pretty well, you know, and yeah, like no, there was no sort of argument or anything like that. They were just, you know, working, that's all. Yeah.
So you were essentially working for those people,
yeah,
though?
Yeah, we were working for them too, yeah.
What did you get? Well, how were you paid for your work?
Oh, it wasn't that much, but the living was, yeah, but I don't think the pay was important for us. It was just doing it, and, you know, like...
Yeah. Did you ever feel that you were being exploited for their gain or not?
I think a little bit, yeah. After a while, I found that out, you know, but I didn't care at that time. You know,
What, when you found out how much money was being made?
You know, they reckon they later on down the track, they offered some money to all the blokes who were... Yeah, the government did, I think.
Did you get some money?
Yeah, I got not much, but...
You got some, though.
Yeah.
You still ride horses today?
Yeah, I still ride horses. Yeah, I went out of the station, Jason, yeah.
Yeah.
They got me riding a horse there.
You can handle one pretty well, I imagine.
Yeah. Like they were quiet.
Can I take you back to the 1960s when the equal pay came in? What happened?
1960. Oh, yeah. At that time, I was in Mindhouse Station. Mindhouse Station. I was working there then. Yeah, no, pay was, it was all right, yeah. It was good then, yeah.
But once the Aboriginal stockman had to get the same wage or a fair wage, what happened to the amount of job opportunities that were around?
What do you mean at the station?
We hear stories about, or you read about the migration of Aboriginal communities that were on the stations that all of a sudden left and moved into Fitzroy Crossing and Derby.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing I've noticed is that when the liquor thing started to open up, you know, that's most of the problem in there, you know. It wasn't just that, it wasn't the money thing, you know. But I think it was just where people get bored in, the liquor tenor was open for everybody to go in, you know. And that's where most of the people, you know, were just coming and just left jobs, you know, like that, you know. I heard that in Fitzroy, but, you know, around here, you know, some of us were still working at Bush and still coming, you know, didn't matter much.
But what happened what was the consequence of so many Aboriginal stockmen stopping that type of work and moving into town?
Yeah, well, and another reason was, like, they left, you know, like, they had these motorbikes and helicopter and they're doing all the, most of the stuff, and they just left horses just like that, you know, and the old men were used to riding horses and that, you know, they didn't see these sort of thing happen, you know. So some of them just left and come into, most of my, like, the people that were up on the Gibb Road, they come to Mountjoy and live here. My father and many others, they lived in Mountjoy, didn't they? Yeah.
So the people that live around the community here, many of them have a past or a family past of working as stockmen?
Yeah, they a whole lot of them, yeah. Yeah, some of them up there where they were coming up the coast, coming here. They went out and done a bit of riding and all that, you know, doing stock job, and they all come back in here.
I was just hearing the police officer talk earlier saying that there's, you know, there's some problems in town, social issues.
Yeah.
What role did the leaving the cattle stations and moving in off the stations into communities, what role has that played to contributing to the situation you've got today?
Yeah, and we played a huge role, like, you know, but leaving the place, like, you know, like station and thing, it was real sort of, you know, it was, well, the old men and women that were up on station working, you know, doing that and had everything there, you know. They felt sad leaving that place and coming into a place here in Mountjoy, but they got family and thing here, they sort of, you know, yeah.
So you've gone from, what, the early days when you were, imagine you were paid in tea and sugar.
Yeah,
you saw that, yeah?
Yeah, I saw that. We weren't working, but we were only kids when Dad and Ting live on that, you know, Dad and Mum,
yeah.
Just on sugar and you know, ration, you know, they every every month or so they to have ration, you know, tea leaf, sugar and all that, you know, and even clothes, you know. Yeah.
Mm. And so that would be the station owner that came and came and paid you like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
how do you feel thinking about back to those days now?
Yeah. Bit sad, but you know. Yeah. And, but now we can do things that we can get our own stuff now and get much more money. And
you've seen incredible change in the beef industry, haven't you, when you think of that, the payment in flour and sugar to big camps, to fair pay.
Man, look, I went to several stations, like, you know, and after seeing our old people and, you know, myself being treated like, you know, not bad, but, you know, it's things like tea leaf sugar to a place where you get fed real, you know, and, you know, you get the money to get your own thing, you know, and,
Is there any particular station that you have fond memories of, particularly fond memories of?
Oh, yeah, one day on Napier, where I was born, really, you know, and had a manager there who was, you know, real real good, yeah. And one, he was young, what to do, he was living in Meter. His father was a manager at Meter, and then he come over, and he was a head stockman in Napier, you know, and good bloke, yeah. And
why did he say that? Why is he a good bloke?
Well, you know, he didn't, we knew what to do, and he didn't sort of tell you what to do, you know. He knew what was gonna happen, you know, and things like that, you know, what we're gonna do, and you know what to do, just go for it, you know, and that's it, yeah.
Any particular horse you remember?
Oh, yeah, that one. I had one there called Texas, big brown horse.
This was at Napier?
Yeah, at Napier, yeah.
What was good about Texas?
One bloke called Ray Jogerson, he broke him in. And so the first year, and I started doing stock work, and that was the colt they gave me, see,
Texas was your first?
Yeah, first one, yeah.
Yeah, and your best?
Yeah, the best too, he was.
What's the one thing you really miss about those days?
One thing I miss now is the stockman like life now, but you won't see him anymore. That's the best thing, yeah. I'd see horses and cattle, you know, like, you don't see him doing any mustering now, not many now, you know. You see the helicopter doing all that job now. And, yeah, but it's good to see cattle in the yard, you know, like when we go over there, I'm up there on the rail looking at them.
So how important is the beef industry to Aboriginal history in this part of the world?
Well, I think you should, we should get the credit due, I think, you know, because we worked when it was right down there first, and now they look at them, they're up here now doing a lot, yeah. And I reckon it's important, you know, like to give one a credit to the old blokes, you know, like, you know, where them started and, you know. Yeah, I reckon.
Have you seen a few blokes come and give it a go and think, this guy's not going to make it?
Yeah, some of them did.
Because this is tough country, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Real tough, yeah.
So when you saw someone and thought, oh, they're not going to last, what was the giveaway?
Well, then you can see that'll be, as soon as they get on a buck and horse, they get thrown and they go on.
You still ride a bit?
Oh, yeah, still ride a bit, yeah. Like, out in the station there, do a bit of riding with Jason, yeah.
Yeah. Still muster?
No, I never do any muster, but I was just up there just doing a bit of riding.
Those days have been and gone now, hey? So what would it mean to you? How important would it be for you to see the young people here have a strong connection again with the local cattle industry?
Well, I reckon that's important, you know, with these kids here today. We don't want to see them go, you know, like there's drugs and alcohol in this place. No, there's many. And we don't want to see them go that way. Like, you know, we didn't go that way. We went straight to the place, you know, like, we after school we finished, we went straight to the station, working and done it. But you see these kids, they got many opportunity for anything, you know, like, but we don't want to see them go that road. That's why we done that. Jason got a program there with all the kids, you know, and I want to see that happen. We want to see some of these kids getting in there too, see, and
Is there anything particular about cattle work that teaches discipline?
Oh, yeah, you got to be alert at times, you know, like, you know, be careful and, like, you know, you can get injured and things like that, but then you're gonna be, you got, like I say, you gotta be, you gotta listen to what we tell you, and like, you know, yeah, what I've learned, you know. And, yeah.
How did the Aboriginal stockman manage to balance this work on the stations with keeping culture strong and the heritage strong?
Oh yeah, well that's, well I think in like the culture was, it was sort of bred in them, I think. You know, and as soon as they left that area, like around Munja area and their home country, they still had it, you know, and every Christmas time they used to, you know, have a bit of crobbery and...
Yeah.
And yeah, that was all there still, you know, and...
You remember this?
Yeah, I remember it, yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, and yeah, just to take them back, you know, like, when we finished, we used to go out in the bush and live it out there, you know, with dampers and, like, with flour, sugar, and tea leaf, you know, and just live out there, just out the whole Christmas, you know, like, live it out there, and then when the work started, come, go back in, you know.
So the wet season, when there's no mustering, you'd be out bush?
Yeah, out bush, yeah.
Yeah?
Every time we do river go down, we go back, washing time, pick up more flour and sugar and things like that, yeah.
And then come back for the start of muster?
Yeah, come back and start the muster, yeah.
So it's such a strong part of the history around here, recent history around here. How many of the Indigenous stockmen, with your stories, your memories, are left?
Oh, there's plenty yet still. Yeah. I can still remember, but, you know, what was happening and all that, you know. Yeah. But I tell my kids about it, my children, and the grandchildren, I tell them about it.
What do you tell your kids?
Well, I tell them about the good old days, you know, like we used to have, you know, and we didn't have much of these. You know, some kids, they have their freedom here, but... You know, like, back then, we still had to, you know, listen to what our old people say, you know, like, and, live it,
Would you like to see your kids or your grandkids work in the cattle industry?
Yeah, I want to see. I got one day, a bit of a, you're getting a bit of humbug now, but I want to see him get on there, And we'll sort of get him on there, you know, like, it'd be good.
You think there'll be an opportunity for him?
Yeah, there'll be plenty there,
Get him over the humbug?
Get him over the humbug, yeah.
But that's what this is about, isn't it? It's about opportunities, make a living, have a career.
Yeah, that's it. We don't want to see him living out in the street and, you know, just smoking and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Good luck with it, Eddie.
Thank you.
Eddie Baer, a community leader at Mowinjum. This is a community that owns the pastoral lease for the adjoining Mowinjum station. There's some big plans to develop the business and create more jobs, but there's already a lot happening.
After 100 years, the real story of World War I is still hotly debated.
Australia was a nation in mourning for at least the next two decades.
The Great War, 10 contested questions, almost 10 hours of listening.
The military leaders feared that war was more or less inevitable.
Distilled from a weekend of exceptional ABC RN programs.
And then there was the psychological devastation.
On USB stick, The Great War is available now from ABC shops, centres, online and now mobile.
Just heard some of the history of this area from Eddie Baer, but I've jumped in the car now to find out what it's like now. Jason Russ manages the property here, and up ahead we've got a fairly big boab tree, big piece of machinery, and these look like some fairly new yards, Jason.
Yes, they are. They're a brand new set of cattle yards that we've built probably in the last 2 years, built it over stage over a couple of years, we needed to have it. I mean, basically you could understand that we had nothing here, and we needed stockyards. So that's what they are.
So this is a sign of things happening. Bit of money and all that.
Absolutely, yeah. We had a grant from ILC, and which is an Indigenous Land Corporation, which basically helped fund it. So, and that's what we've got.
So they're empty at the moment, but that's because it's the end of cattle season.
Yes, absolutely, end of cattle season, and we start again in April next year. So basically, close it all down and get ready for the next season.
So who works here at the moment? How many workers?
I've got 5 Aboriginal guys at the moment that work with us. We're just basically doing maintenance, repair, fencing, clearing fence lines, and until obviously it rains, and then we'll all pull up and have a break.
I saw those clouds yesterday afternoon. It looked like it's coming.
Yeah, well, we've had a few, as you can see, we've had a couple of showers here now, but it's obviously not going to affect us at the moment. But once it starts getting serious and starts raining, we'll have to pull up and have a bit of time off, and everyone goes away over Christmas break and get ready for the next season.
Just went past a new water tank there as well, so there's things happening here.
Absolutely, yeah. Now look, there's as we're going to venture down this new road that I'm just going to get on here now, yeah, we've done quite a lot of development here in the last two years, and there's still a lot to go.
Yeah. So if I came here 2 years ago, what would I have seen?
Well, see the scrub that you can see on both sides of this road is all you'd see. You wouldn't even be able to drive down this road.
Lots happened.
Yeah, it has, and it's been good. It's been a good. It needed it. It's sort of. It's been good for the community. It's good for the town. And it's good. It needed to happen. You know, it's a pastoral lease, and it should be run as a pastoral lease.
Yeah. So what? The lease still held. Just wasn't being run. Just wasn't being managed.
Yeah, well, it does. It. You know, things were getting pretty serious at one stage here with the Pastoral Lands Board, and they stepped in and said, "Look, you need to start sorting it out." And that's why I came on board. Mind your Aboriginal Corporation approached me and see if I could come along and help, you know, get it in the right direction, and that's what we've done now.
Yeah. And he's some stock here, or the first?
Yes, we're just going into the first paddock here, Blue Bush Paddock, and there's some stock just watering on a trough here.
All right. You want me to get this gate?
No, that's right, we'll just drive in here. I can take you around it.
I love the black cockatoos with the red. You don't get them so much over east.
Oh, we've got them everywhere here. They're all over the property. If you can see in that gum tree there, there's 20 of them. But no, look, it's good. We're only 20 k's from town. The community's only 20 k's away from the station, and we've got wildlife out here and bird life and animals and cattle and, you know, what do you want?
Yeah. So what did you say, 1,500 head of cattle at the moment?
A bit over two years ago, we started with basically no cattle here, and we're up around the 1,500 head and growing. Remember, we've got breeders on the ground, and like obviously now they're starting to carve out, and we'll see that today. Those numbers will increase as they're carving.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that changes all the time. So, you know, breeders and calve, and next year we'll hopefully have 2,000 and continue the numbers. Please close this cut. Yeah.
Jason, this all looks new as well. New gates we've just gone through and trap yards here.
Yeah, well, basically what we've done is we're lucky enough on Mangum that we don't have any rivers and, well, basically surface water on the property, so it's all man-made waters, as you can see with all the troughs. So it gave us an
opportunity. There's a new one there.
Yep. Yeah. So it's obviously gave us the opportunity to put traps on all our waters, and it just cuts the mustering cost down. We can basically just set the traps and trap into the laneway, and the laneway continues to the yard. So, you know, we try and cut down the helicopter costs and get all the guys back on horses again like they used to and pick up the cattle and walk them into the station yard.
Yeah, you'd rather do it on horse, or the guys would rather be mustering on horseback?
Absolutely, yeah, no, it is. I mean, you know, quietens the cattle, are good for the cattle, and the guys like it. They love riding horses. That's their passion they have, so, yeah. No, it's good.
So is there much feed around for them at the minute?
Look, we had a pretty bad bushfire go through here about 8 weeks ago. As you can see how black it's in this paddock. But look, no, they survived. There's sections of the paddock that didn't get burnt out, and there's been a few green shoots come through with the moisture that we've had, and we've had a couple of light showers here. So, look, you know, this time of the year is like this. It's very dry and barren, and, you know, the cattle will survive. They'll, you know, like I said, it's only another few weeks away before we get a storm and come back in a month's time and it'll be green grass here. So, no, they find a way to survive.
Gee, this soil's changing, isn't it? This dirt's gone a bit more of that red colour, less of the sandy colour now.
Yeah, well, this pin-down country is pretty good. Like, you know, it's different country than, say, on the Fitzroy, in the Fitzroy Valley. We've got a lot of wattle scrub and pin-down, but I've noticed the change here with stock. I mean, you stock it and it changes formation, stock in these paddocks.
Yeah. So the cattle you run, mainly Brahman, is it?
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, the reason why I've said we stick to Brahman is that, look, we're live export to Indonesia. We're right on the point of the north. Broome export's only 2 hours away, so it's common sense if you stick to live export and stick to the Brahman.
Yeah. So that's the market, is it? You aim for the live export?
Absolutely. I mean, look, the southern market's 2,000 kilometres away and the freight's just, it'd kill you, so you're better off, you know, you're better off sticking to something. Like I said, we're only 2 hours away from the local market, so to get on an export boat, so, you know, the transport costs are very low.
Yeah, all right, and you see that as a strong market for the future?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, we had the hiccups as we did, but, I mean, look, it's turning around now, and we got good dollars this year. We got $2.15 for our steers, which is, you know, unbelievably good. So they're talking it could grow higher than that. So, no, look, things are positive, and you stick what's going. You don't go changing things because, you know, this is work, and you stick to it.
Yeah. I'm chatting here with Jason Russ, who manages Mowanjum Station just outside of Derby. Jason, why
What motivates you? Why are you interested in trying to generate jobs for the Indigenous guys around here?
Oh, look, if you understand, my grandfather came here in the turn of the century and settled on Gibb River Station, Mount Barnett, Mount Elizabeth, in the early 1920s, and obviously I was born and grew up on the station and grew up with him. And just obviously have a passion in your life, and I've got all this experience. I've been in industry myself, over 25 years worth of experience in the cattle industry, and I've got a lot of knowledge and experience, and I want to palm it on to the younger guys. So, and opportunity's there for me, so I say, well, why not?
So we just heard from Eddie Bear earlier about some of his background. You've seen all that change over the years, have you?
Absolutely. Well, I've grown up and seen it all. My family's seen it, and I've seen it. I've grown up and watched it all unfold, so I understand their side of the story as well. As you know, it's not, you know, I've seen it all happen, so I mean I can relate to it all, and that's probably another thing you can do, is relate to what's going on, and that's a big thing to be able to understand and relate to what's happening.
Now, some water here.
Yeah, it's a dam, another dam that we put in. Obviously you can see all the cattle on the bank. Part of our 1,500 head of cattle, we've got this is mainly where all our weaners are, but I've got cows and calves in here as well at the moment, but as you can see there's a good nice quality line of cattle there.
Yeah. You happy with the condition?
Yeah, they are. They're holding on quite well, considering we had bushfires earlier, and you know, obviously we're still keeping the lick. You have to feed lick out for the cattle, but you know, to be honest, they're looking good.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. Everywhere you turn, there's calves. You know, look around here.
All right, so I'm seeing, you know, I'm seeing young calves on the ground.
Yes.
What are they worth?
Oh, well, at the moment, you know, potentially they're worth up to $600. So, you know, and we're bred on the property. So, I mean, they're climatised already because they're going to survive the environment that we're standing in right now.
So you'd rather cattle that are bred here than bought in?
Oh, look, I mean, obviously we had to buy breeders in to build our stocks up quicker. You can breed your own cattle, it's a process and takes time, but we needed to speed the operation up, and that's why we bought breeders in, and obviously once we get our numbers to where we need to, well, we've got a choice to then continue breeding with our own cattle.
Okay, so how long from now? About 18 months before you sell them?
Yeah, I reckon about 18 months or 2 years. We work on 2 years, so we'll ride two wet seasons out and then we're right to go.
We've got a lot of cattle here.
We have. We pulled up at one of our regional dams that we put in here, and no, it's good. It's there's a good group of breeders here, and you can see all these little calves running around.
Yeah. You happy with what you see?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're good quality calves. I mean, we're on the right track. We're breeding the right, going down the right road, I think. You know.
This little one here, how old would it be?
Oh, today? Yeah. Day old?
Day old.
Yeah. Would have been born last night by the looks of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're seeing them fresh.
Oh, no, they are. And I'm, you know, it's good. Calving, you know, pretty much at the right time, and they're good quality in the calf. So good quality calf, good quality weaner, good quality sale animal.
Yeah. So they get a day old and they just get around, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, remember, they've got their mums there. So, I mean, they're on fresh milk and, you know, they're happy. They don't know what the conditions are. They, you know, but no, things are going good.
So does that, the fact that this is the driest time of the year, and you've got the calves on the ground now, does that must put a bit more pressure on the mums. Does that worry you at all?
Oh, yeah, it does. But, I mean, like I said before, you know, we're only a week or a couple of weeks away from rain. So once it rains, it changes the whole ball game. I mean, there's green feed around and the cows will freshen up and they'll be fine. We've just pulled up to one of the dams we've got in the paddock here, and, you know, there's probably, I don't know, 600 head of cattle in this paddock at the moment. Probably look across here, there's a couple of hundred, 250, 300 head of cattle that are standing here eating lick, and obviously having a look at us that we've just pulled up. But this is our 80% of the cattle here, our sale cattle for next year. So it's the income for us and the community and the station for next year.
So these will be mustered after May next year?
Yes, they'll be mustered probably earlier than that. I'll probably get into these April, and obviously draft off is all by weight now. So all the stuff that's in the right weight range will get sold to live export.
Yeah. Okay, so when it comes to mustering these cattle, or for basically getting ready to ship them off to Indonesia or wherever it is, yeah, how does that lead to jobs for the guys locally?
Well, obviously I can't do this on my own, so you need staff around you. So obviously you've got the local Aboriginal guys that come and help me. So I get them on horseback and they actually work and help me. They help me muster and draft and brand and truck to cattle, and it's employment.
Yep. And have they all got the skills that you need?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. The guys, I mean, the five guys that I've got working have got the skills, and there's I've got some school kids that are about to leave school, and obviously they're going to go into a training program and I'll start them off fresh and train them up.
Yeah.
So I've got plenty of time. I'll train them up over the next however long it takes.
Yeah. So the more of these you get, the more cattle you get, potentially the more jobs you have.
Absolutely. That's the goal, the whole focus of it all. So, yeah, and it's long-term too. I mean, you've got to understand, in the cattle game, it's long-term. It's not a short-term project. It's a long-term project. So they've got the jobs here forever.
Beautiful country, isn't it?
Well, it is. You know, it's different. I mean, you know, like I said before, earlier, that I noticed that the cattle change the country as well. I mean, they graze it and keep the long grass down and keep it nice and short. It's probably a little bit shorter than we want to at the moment. You remember, it's November and it's very dry, so once we get a few storms, it'll all change.
They're interested, aren't they?
No, they are. These are good cattle. Look, we've been lucky enough. We've been buying some good cows in the last 2 years off some other properties in the Kimberleys. Ruby Plains and Christmas Creek, Brooking Springs. There's some local properties that have been buying cattle, and they've been good quality cattle and quiet. And obviously with our guys on horseback, and we go nice and steady and look after the cattle and keep them quiet.
Yeah. So 1,500 head at the moment, how many hectares are we talking?
Well, we're only operating on 50,000 hectares at the moment, but we can go to 100,000 acres, so 50,000 acres, yeah. Go to 100,000 acres, and then obviously try and double our numbers.
Okay, so at the moment 50,000 acres, about 20,000 hectares, I think, if I get the maths right in my head.
Yeah, it's about that.
Yeah, so that would make you reasonably small around this part of the world, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, we're a very small player in the deal, absolutely. But at the end of the day, it's not about the size, it's about what it's doing. It's about the opportunities for the guys, and it's a stepping stone, and there's no reason why they can't move on from here and go and work on other properties. So it's not about the size, it's about what we're actually trying to achieve here.
But you're, as you said earlier, you told me your grandfather was here in the early days of the cattle industry. You must have seen people come and go and see how tough it is around here.
Oh, yeah, it is. But I always kept saying is that you've got to stick it out and don't give in. And, you know, you have good times and bad times. You have good cattle price and bad cattle price and things up and down. It's just part of what it is in the industry, and you just got to learn to stick it out.
Yeah, but this country's sent a few people under over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it does. But I found out that if you put your heart into it and stick it out, you can survive.
Yeah, all right, so there's a lot still to do. An interesting future. Perhaps we can go and meet up with Eddie again and see what he makes of the future as well.
Oh, for sure. No, look, a big part of it. I mean, you know, being the chairman of Mangum, you know, it's control. I mean, I'm only doing my part. Everyone's got a role to play, and I'm only just playing my role.
Seriez-vous tenté par une journée de musique, gastronomie et de joie de vivre?
Oh, if only I'd paid closer attention at school, I'd understand what Christian just said. You can by subscribing to the RN Weekly Newsletter. Subscribe now and you're in the running for 20 hours of French language lessons. Or can we seduce you with a double pass to a day of music, food and joie de vivre at So Frenchy, So Chic in the Park? To subscribe, just look for So Frenchy on the RN homepage.
Steve Austin's the Chief Executive Officer at the Mowanjum Corporation, and we've just seen the cattle station and how it is in the existing situation, the pastoral lease here. But there's a lot planned, a lot of further development planned, and Steve knows all about this. What's being planned, Steve?
Well, there's with the Department of Water and the Food for Water program, there's an irrigation trial site about to happen out on the station. That probably involves putting in a couple of centre pivots at a 38 hectare or more each. And basically that will be used to help us supplement the cattle feeding and gain quality weight on cattle in the shortest possible time.
How big a change is that for the way that agriculture is run around here?
In the West Kimberley, it's a huge change because, like, there's not much being done, but everybody's looking at it now. And for us, as much as looking after our cattle and that, it's important that we create jobs and opportunities for our kids and that. And with Derby only being a small community, they've got limited for Indigenous children, limited opportunities. So this, I hope, really creates a marketplace for them.
What are the main reasons for the development?
Australia needs to produce more beef to fill markets and that. And it's a way of being able to turn beef off a lot quicker. Because we can get quality feed into them, and then it's also about creating work opportunities as well as all the training we can put into the people.
Okay, so what at the moment, if you haven't got grass, you can't fatten beef, but once you've got this up and running, you've got feed for them?
Yeah, if you look out there this time of the year, we're supplementing feed. There's not much out in the paddocks that are any good for them for eating. So we really struggle now, and by doing these centre pivots, we won't struggle. We'll be able to grow our own feed, and it'll be quality feed.
Yeah. Will it get to the point where you can feed stock from other stations around here?
That's our intentions too, is helping out our neighbours up the Gibb River that really struggle, and being able to bring their cattle down and use it as a feedlot for fattening and that, and then move them on to market a lot quicker. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's the money coming from for this?
Royalties for regions through the Food for Water project.
Because we're talking millions, I take it.
Yeah, there's quite a lump sum of money involved, yeah.
Yeah. Will it work?
Yeah, it'll definitely work. We'll make sure it does.
Why do you say that? Why are you so confident?
Because I've seen where it's been done. It's been done in a lot of other places in Australia, and we're tapping into some really good technology, and we've got the support of the government with people to help us with this to make sure it works. Yeah, yeah. It'll work for sure.
But people, I know people have tried things that have worked in other parts of Australia here in the Kimberley before. They've tried to bring sheep here. That didn't go too well. So what's different this time?
We're bringing the technology in too. That's the main difference.
Steve Austin there with the vision, a bit of the vision for the future around here. Well, Jason Russ is back with me again, the manager of Mowanjum Station, and I've also got Eddie Baer back with me as well, Mowanjum community leader. Jason, I'll start with you. How big a change is the plans that we just heard outlined from Steve?
Oh, look, it's massive. It's basically changed the whole direction of the whole deal as far as, you know, we're going into farming. It's a whole new line of work, obviously job opportunities, but to actually go into the farming side of it, yeah. It's a huge change.
So you're a beef man. Do you know how to grow crops?
Yeah, I do. I'm lucky enough. I've been around the industry long enough to know. Yeah, it's not that hard. Yeah, I do.
Do you know what you're going to plant?
At this stage, it looks like it's going to be sorghum. We've got a few trials going, but at this stage, I think we'll trial with sorghum and see how it goes.
Yeah. So this is, it is trial. There'll be some errors here along the way.
Well, that's what a trial is, isn't it? Yeah. Obviously, we're going to have some errors along the way. I mean, we've got, you know, it's obviously starting from scratch, so we just got to learn as we go and learn from it until we find out how it all works.
Eddie, what will it offer the community here? This type of investment, this change in the way the property's run.
It'll offer a lot of work, like for the community itself, and not just that, but Derby, you know, and yeah, it'll be a good big project. Yeah.
Yeah. How badly do the young guys in particular around here need this employment opportunity?
Yeah, they really need it because this sort of thing didn't happen before, like, you know, and now it's happening. We need to get them young ones in, and yeah. Like, we got the school coming in now, the young kids, they're doing, you know, and now we're going to get some of these kids from Mowanjum into that, yeah.
Jason, you told me earlier about the type of work that exists at the moment. How will it change once the irrigation and the farming side of the operation's up and happening?
Well, it's basically, instead of just a normal cattle season that runs from sort of April to October, November, we can probably, work will go longer because obviously the farming side of it, we could be growing hay now and cutting hay, so there's machinery operators and people still feeding cattle out and carting hay, selling hay. It's just it just opens it up instead of as more than a narrow seasonal work. We've got it's a all year round job,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah. Okay, so much more steady, stable employment.
Yeah, stable employment, and you know, there's other ongoing work. Obviously, in the wet season when it's raining, they can go away and do their training. If there's any training to be done regarding with the cropping or training to getting their licence for operating tractors, well, obviously you'd go and do that in the quiet time in the wet, and when the season fires up again, well, they come straight back into their job.
So it'll mainly be Aboriginal people that are employed?
Yeah, obviously it will. You know, obviously you've got myself here that's sort of directing it all, but no, that's the main focus on it, is that they're first on the list.
Yeah.
So that's the plan, yes.
Eddie, as it stands at the moment, how many job opportunities are around here?
Oh, there's not many, you know. That's why when these projects start to happen, we'll have more, and like we can get, you know, like Jason said, it's for the Aboriginal people, you know, to start on, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you get a sense that there's a lot of people that want the opportunity that are willing to work?
Well, some kids are willing to work, and well, we need to take them out of what they're trying to, you know, they might get into, you know, like, you know, in town and doing, you know, like alcohol and drug, they might do that, you know, and just get them out of there. Yeah.
How big a problem is that around here?
Oh, yeah, it's big, yeah.
So when we talk about developing agriculture, this is more than an economic or an agricultural project. It's for a social benefit, is it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Is that why you're part of it, Jason?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, like Eddie and I talk all the time, I mean, we're trying to help them. And we've got the ability and capabilities to do it, so why not?
Yeah.
And they need, someone's got to show them, and obviously we're the ones to do it, so we've got to keep trying, and hopefully we put our best in, and hopefully we get some results for them at the end of it.
Yeah. So it's a big deal for Mowagem Station and for the community here, I understand that, but what about for the actual beef industry around the area here?
Well, it's going to be huge, because remember, there's a lack of availability for hay for a start, and we're getting hay from, you know, 2,000 kilometres away from Perth, Geraldton, to feed cattle, and if we can produce a good quality hay right in the Kimberley, well, it's on hand, isn't it?
Yeah.
So everyone benefits, not just us, the whole community benefits.
But it feels like there's a lot happening at the moment. There's the Mowagem Station is one of four that's being developed, and we've also got a big abattoir being built up the road. Is this a period of significant change for the beef industry?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, as well as with the China, the agreement with China, and obviously, you know, building our strength with Indonesia as well. And it's definitely doing that. And you know, we talk about this all the time. You ebbs and flows, and you know, make hay while the sun shines, as I say. So that's where we're at,
and that's what you're doing.
Exactly.
Gee, that wind picks up quick, doesn't it? It's a bit of relief, actually. Eddie, you've worked on stations for a long time. How much of a change will this be?
Big change, yeah. But for us, you know, it's going to be a big change for this place, for Mowagem, you know, and yeah. Mm.
Jason, ultimately, how many people do you think you can offer jobs out there?
Oh, look, at this stage, we're starting off, we'll probably have 10, but I mean, there's no reason why we couldn't get it up to 20, 25 people, which would be huge for a little community like Mowagem, if we can have 25. And keep in mind, people that get trained in this don't have to stay here. They can go on into other jobs, and then we'll continue getting replacements and have that core group all the time here.
Yeah. How many cattle will you get on this place eventually?
Oh, look, I'd like to think I'd get the numbers up to, you know, 7,000 or 8,000, 10,000 head of cattle eventually, if I can get enough crops on the ground, but, you know, that's a long-term goal.
What do you reckon, Eddie?
I reckon that'd be a goal, yeah.
Yeah. You'd like to see that?
I'd like to see that, yeah.
What sort of difference would that make to a place like this? Because I guess there's not just the jobs, there's the money that it would bring in as well.
Yeah, bring the money, yeah. The money, and, you know, you get a change in this place too, like, you know. Yeah.
Would you ever consider maybe fattening cattle from other stations around here as well?
Yeah, well, that's part of the program as well. We've there's cattle, Aboriginal cattle stations up the Gibb River Road, and we're already looking into that. That's the idea of it. When I said the 7,000, that's including other cattle coming in, so that'd be part of it. They could bring cattle down, and where they can't get access to them, and we can get access to 24/7, as though they could bring the cattle down to our fattening module and fatten them for export or Meatworks or wherever they need to go.
So how far off is it from actually happening, from, you know, the crops going in the ground?
Well, we've started the construction of it as of now, as I speak. I've got some of the school kids starting on Monday that's going to start working for us. So
that's jobs already?
We started on Monday. We've got two kids turning up on Monday to start.
Yeah. Do you know who are the kids, Eddie?
No, I don't know yet. Jason.
They're two young brothers that start on Monday. They've just graduated from school. And basically they start here Monday and start working with us.
Yeah, so job straight out of school?
Straight out of school and straight on working for the Mowagem Station.
Yeah, I guess you need to see more of that, do you, Eddie?
Yeah, sure. Need to see more of that, yeah.
Yeah, big changes, eh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, good luck with it.
No worries, thank you.
Eddie, good luck.
Thank you.
Exciting times in the Kimberley. I've already heard that another 14 workers have just been put on, and that local students are also now learning how to handle horses. Today's program was produced by Jeremy Story Carter, and we couldn't have done any of this week without the help of ABC Local Radio here in the Kimberley, or without technical support from Paul Penton. And of course, the whole Bush Telegraph team. Executive producer is Rowan Reed, producers Bell Tromp, Verica Jokic, Monique Bowley, and Jeremy Story Carter. That's it for today and for the week from the Kimberley. I'm Cameron Wilson, and I'll see you on Monday for Bush Telegraph.
In fact, I set my 14-year-old son on fire the other day. You know, he's seen us and the other guys doing torches, and he said, "Oh, Dad, I want to do a torch for him, 15. I said, "Yep, no worries." And I've got to admit, that was kind of a weird thing, throwing a match at your son, and, you know, when he's doused in petrol.
Taking life to the extreme with Australian stunt performance Off Track Saturday at 1.
On Background Briefing.
Dear world, Ebola has managed to bring my country to a standstill.
It's crippled economies, destroyed communities and families.
I lost 8 family members, including my dad.
So why, despite pleadings, was the Australian government so slow to respond?
If Australia has money available, it should be using that money to mobilise its own emergency response.
Background Briefing, Sunday morning, after the news at 8.